Good afternoon and welcome to a special edition of Midday at the Movies. We are live at the 2025 New Next Film Festival here at the historic Charles Theater in Baltimore. Delighted to have everybody with us here at the theater and on the radio or online. I'm Tom Hall. Today we're going to be looking behind the scenes and behind the screens, talking with creators of the New Next Film Festival, and we'll meet some of the filmmakers whose work will be showcased here over the next few days. If you have a question or comment about the festival, we are not able to take calls today, so drop us an email. Our address is midday@wipr.org. That's midday@wipr.org. Sam Sessa and Eric Hatch are the co-founders of the New Next Film Festival. Sam is a WTMD music host and the director of community events and community engagement for Baltimore Public Media. He is the producer of the festival. Sam, welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you, Tom.
And I'm glad you have nothing else better to do today than hang around with us. I'm moved by that, Sam. I really am. Eric Hatch is a renowned film and music curator here in Baltimore. He also evidently has nothing better to do than hang around with us. He serves as New Next's director of programming. I understand that he screened some 700 film submissions to assemble this year's extraordinary lineup. Eric, welcome. You must be tired.
Yeah, the eyes are a little tired, but yeah, I'm with you.
So if somebody calls you, it's like if I call you up next week and say, hey, Eric, want to hang out? Want to go see a movie? What's your answer?
Tuesday, I will say yes. Monday, probably not looking so good. Yeah.
All right, I'll keep that in mind. Jed Dietz is here as well. He is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. And Jed, you know a little bit about festival putting on.
A little bit. The fact that these guys are awake is amazing to me. Yeah. The huge amount of work goes into getting just to this stage, let alone just past opening night.
So, Sam, we did have opening night last night, a movie called Obex, by Albert Burney, a Maryland filmmaker. How did it go?
It was great, Tom. It was a sold-out show. It was a packed house here at the Charles Theater's biggest auditorium. And I think it was also just a really great... It was a really great vibe. I mean, the director, Albert Burney, brought the star of the movie, his dog, Dorothy, who just charmed the crowd, was wandering all over the theater. It was really funny and very fun.
So, Eric, 700 films to come up with...
Yeah, so I screened about 700 submissions and then probably a couple hundred more films that I saw at other festivals like Sundance, South by Southwest. So yeah, we're talking about boiling down about 1,000 films into perhaps 30 features and 100 shorts or so.
So how does that process unfold? That just seems like such a daunting task.
It is. I mean, you have to continually sort of recenter yourself. You got to make sure you're taking some breaks, getting out into the sunshine every once in a while, or else you go a little loopy. But also pacing yourself is really important.
So do you divide them into categories of like, you know, maybe, absolutely not, absolutely yes? I mean, how do you start?
That's exactly right, yeah. You know, Emma, who works with us at the festival, sets me up with a spreadsheet where everything that we're following is logged. And then, yeah, I mean, maybe there's a few more subdivisions than that. There's like a strong maybe and a weak yes and that. But you just sort of flag ones that you want to keep in mind as you're watching other things. And I try to invite at the outset a couple films that I'm particularly enthusiastic about. And then you can sort of form a core from that and add notes that might be missing, because inevitably with that many films you're going to have a lot of strong contenders, and it might come down to an issue of bringing something, whether it's a voice or a subject, that you don't yet have represented into the lineup.
And Sam, you got about 35 feature-length narrative documentary films, 120 short films this year, both narrative, both documentary, comedy ones, thriller ones, the whole business. Anything new this year? I mean, you started this 2 years ago. You're a slow learner. You did not learn your lesson. So here you are doing it not once, but twice more. What's new?
So I would say new this year, besides the sheer volume of films, one of the things that I really like about New Next, and you know, as you mentioned, you know, we started last night, and we're rolling all through the weekend here at the Charles Theater, and tickets are still available for many of our screenings, but one of the things I love the most about this festival is the emphasis on short films. Eric, correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't this the most short films we've ever had?
Yeah, we have 14 programs, and I think the number was 120 shorts, so it's a staggering amount, really.
And what that means is we're catching all these filmmakers as they're emerging. We're catching them right as they're getting out there and putting their names out there, and I think that that is one of the really great kind of gists and one of the great thrusts of NewNex is to, just as the name implies, like be on the cutting edge of where the DIY, where the independent filmmaker scene is going.
Yeah, and a little later in the show today, we're going to be talking to a couple of the short film directors who've got movies being screened here at the festival, and we'll talk about how this is such a good stepping stone, a good leaping off point for them in their careers. And Jed, of course, you and the Maryland Film Festival always emphasize short films as well, and over the years, you know, we came to know filmmakers as them at the beginning of their career.
It's just interesting, just as you guys were talking about that, I was thinking this weekend the one of the Safdie brothers, Benny Safdie, is opening a major film with Dwayne Johnson in the lead role. He had been at the festival and was an emerging filmmaker that Eric really discovered, along with Ronnie Bronstein, Mary Bronstein, a bunch of people coming in some of those early eras that he was programming there. And I'm curious, Eric, in this 700-plus group, and I can't believe it was only 700. You see so many films, but are you seeing a shift in the art form, or are you still seeing a kind of vitality that you would have seen back in early Maryland Film Festival days?
Yeah, I think the not a shift per se, but you know, the film art form continues to refresh itself. Reinvent might be overstating it, but there are so many young voices, and I think the tools are so accessible for filmmaking these days, particularly with a short film, that even though the expense and the workload is large, so many people are pursuing it who might not have had the opportunity even 10 years ago. So, in the diversity of the submissions we received, in the variety of genres, so many people are reaching, you know, we're showing a film from Cuba, we're showing a film from Lebanon, you know, people are finding us all over the world, which also, you know, over time, the chances that that's going to happen are just increasing.
Yeah, and Sam, I mean, this is a festival that features the work not only of local people, but as Eric was just alluding to, people from around the world. How many different filmmakers are represented? Do you know?
It's over 300, which I think is breaking our own record of a little over 200 last year. And that's one of the really heartening things is, we have a modest budget. We're not able to travel all those people. But simultaneous to New York Film Festival happening right now, this weekend as well, so many people from New York, L.A., you know, around the world are coming right here to Baltimore to share their work and check out work by their peers.
Yeah, that's great. And Sam, does it get easier? I mean, when you start repeating it? I mean, obviously, the word has gotten out. I mean, if 700 people are submitting films for Eric to, you know, think about. But in a third year, is it, you know, considerably different, would you say, than it was the first year?
Well, when we started it, we put this festival together as a 3-day event in, 6 months?
Yeah.
And so we've got more runway now than we've ever had. But with the number of films growing, with the amount of time that we're, you know, expanding into, the team grows, the responsibilities grow, the list of things to do grows. So I wish I could say, oh, I've got it down, Tom. You know, third year, yeah, I understand everything there is to know about film festivals. But as I'm sure Jed could tell you, that list never gets shorter. And I don't know that it ever gets really easy. Eric, does it ever get easy?
Oh, no.
if it's getting easier, you're doing something wrong.
Right. Yeah, right. something is wrong. And Jed, you know, this is an historic location for the Maryland Film Festival.
Absolutely.
And for the NewNex Film Festival. Talk about April of 1999, when the first Maryland Film Festival took place in this very theater, or complex of theaters.
Yeah, well, I mean, the lobby we were sitting in wasn't a lobby in 1999. It was, there was a lot of work had gone in that Buzz Cusack had put into expanding from a single screen, which is now Theater One, to adding four more screens to a five screen. And he was nervous. Could he even get the audience that would fill all those 1,100 seats during the year? The answer is obviously yes, but he didn't know that when he started, so it was a very gutsy move. And when we opened the festival there, I mean, the theater here, it had been a celebration the night before for people who had supported the expansion, but the concession stand wasn't even done. And I called Eddie Dopkin at Classic Catering. I think there was no electricity and water, if I remember correctly. The structure was there, but nothing else. And Eddie Dopkin just said, you leave it to me, we'll have food. And he had, you know, sandwiches and popcorn. I mean, he really made it happen that first year, and then gave us some money. And I said, what, how come you're giving us money? He said, it's your share of the profits. I said, Eddie, did you make any profits from this? And he said, that's the money for the festival. And I said, thank you very much.
Yeah, and then year after year, it grew and grew and grew, and then great things happened. Sam, one of the features of the New Next Film Festival is that there are several screenings throughout the weekend that are free, that are not ticketed yet.
That's right. That's made possible in part from a grant from the Baltimore Community Foundation. They approached us and said, listen, you know, we'd love to come in and support this, but we want to make it as accessible as possible. So not only do we have two free screenings this year, one that's actually underway right now, Lowndes County and The Road to Black Power, but also a trio of Baltimore documentaries that is a fascinating program that Eric put together. And not only that, but we give away, oh my gosh, more than 100 all-access passes to members of the community. We give discounts to folks who live in the surrounding neighborhoods. We give out free tickets to folks who live in the neighborhoods through the community associations. We try to make this festival as accessible as possible.
And Eric, tell us a little bit about the documentary package there that Sam just alluded to.
Yeah, there's three different films in that screening, and one of them is a restoration of a 70s film about Erebus, about the street vendors, fruit vendors that, you know, are such a signature Baltimore experience. And another one is about Globe Posters, which was sort of the go-to poster designer on the East Coast for a variety of music events, go-go music, jazz music, soul music. And that's a work in progress, so we're showing that before its official premiere as sort of a gift to Baltimore. The third is called City Forever, and it's about Baltimore City College and the history of it, but also the current renovation that's happening at the, what do they call it, the Castle on the Hill, I believe. So three different topics that are sort of intrinsic to the fabric of Baltimore life.
If you've just joined us, it's Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall. We are in the lobby of the Charles Theater, the historic theater on Charles Street here in Baltimore, as the New Next Film Festival continues. It opened last night with a film by Albert Burney called Obex, and it continues today, tomorrow, and Sunday. So, Jed Dietz, any particular filmmakers you are going to keep a close eye on and movies that you're very much looking forward to seeing? I mean, you obviously haven't seen any of them yet because many of them are getting their own their premieres
well,
this weekend.
Obex was a great start. I mean, what a charming, wonderful movie. And Dorothy the dog in that, the Superman people would have been lucky to have her star in that movie. I mean, there's so many films I'm looking forward to here, and they're all discoveries for me. Andre is an Idiot is on my list. Lockjaw is on the list. Seeds, which I've heard a lot about, I'm also very interested in. Commando, I love that the you guys are doing sort of a guest host thing, that a completely wild screening reminds me of Scott Erickson doing Terminator or whatever. No, it wasn't. It was
because Commando is like from the 70s or something?
Early 80s. This is, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's sort of most maximalist action film. And Stavi, the local comedian made good, is going to introduce it and curated the pick.
So great.
Yeah.
There's a lot of death. A lot of very violent, over-the-top death in that movie. It's great.
And in lots of movies. That's what movies are all about sometimes. But there's lots of comedy. There's, you know, documentaries. There's, you know, a real wide variety. So that's great. So what are you hearing from filmmakers, Eric, you know, around the country and around the world when it comes to, you know, sort of the position of New Next in the panoply of film festivals?
Well, what I'm hearing is really gratifying, and I try not to accept too much congratulations until Monday because, you know, we're just at day two here. But I think that a lot of the traditional festivals, the institutional festivals in larger cities, you know, when you think of a Toronto or a Sundance, they're getting a little too corporate and a little too formal. That's sort of my instinct, but I'm hearing that a lot from other filmmakers as well, that the accessibility of this festival, both for filmmakers and for audiences, is pretty special. And, you know, we rolled out a red carpet for the benefit of a dog, but this is not a celebrity-driven festival. This is more about the art form and honoring people who are beginning their journey as filmmakers and refining their voice.
That's Eric Hatch. He is the programmer of the New Next Film Festival. He's also the co-founder, along with Sam Sessa, who is the producer of the third annual New Next Film Festival. And Sam, we're going to say goodbye to you and let you go do your thing. You've got plenty to do. And Jed Dietz is here as well. Jed and Eric are going to stick around. We're going to talk to a couple of filmmakers when we come back. Daniel Christian and Jamila Krimple are two directors whose work is being showcased at New Next, and they will join us on the other side of a quick break. It's Midday. We're live from the Charles Theater today. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up with the show Monday here on Midday, it's the Midday Health Watch with our good friend Dr. Lena Wen, the author, public health educator, and columnist for The Washington Post. We'll talk about Tylenol and pregnancy, as well as the latest controversial changes to federal vaccine policy. Plus, Representative Johnny Olszewski Jr., the Democratic congressman for Maryland's 2nd District, will discuss the federal government shutdown and how it's impacting Marylanders. That's all coming up Monday on Midday. And if you've just joined us today, it's Midday at the Movies, live from the historic Charles Theater, Baltimore's oldest movie house, and the site of the third annual New Next Film Festival presented by Baltimore Public Media. Eric Hatch is the co-founder and director of programming of the New Next Film Festival. He's here with us. And Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, is here as well. Joining us now is filmmaker Daniel Christian. His documentary, Possum Town, will have its world premiere screening later this afternoon. Daniel, it's good to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jamila Unique Krimple is an independent filmmaker from Baltimore whose short film, Dwelling, is part of the festival's Maryland Narratives series. Dwelling will screen today and tomorrow here at New Next. Jamila, welcome. Good to see you. And if you have questions or comments for our filmmaker, no calls today, but send us an email. The address is midday@wypr.org. So, Daniel, tell us a little bit about Possum Town. What's the movie about?
Sure. So Possum Town is a feature documentary. It's about the small town of Columbus, Mississippi, and it explores the town through this this large photo archive from an early 1900s photographer named Owen Pruitt, and they called him the picture man of the town. So he had a portrait studio, but he also just took photos out and about, photos of daily life. And it's one of the largest known photographic records of a small southern town under Jim Crow. And so it uses that archive as kind of a jumping off point to explore the town today, and follows several individual stories. And it's a film about how we look at images and how we, and community and, what happens when we reflect on our past together and the kind of shared history that people have, and the harmony that brings out, but also the at times the dissonance as well.
Daniel Christian, one of the filmmakers here at the New Next Film Festival. We are here in the lobby of the Charles Theater. The popcorn is popping. You're probably hearing that, and it smells awfully good in here. So come on down and join us, if not for Midday, then certainly at some point during the weekend for these wonderful films. So Jamila Unique Krimple, tell us about Dwelling.
Yes, so Dwelling is a horror comedy short. Purchase their first home, and when you meet them, they are on the steps of their front porch, and they are sitting out there in the style of American Gothic, Marcus, the husband, has a pitchfork, and Mia, the wife, is looking very stressed out and forlorn. And as we learn, they are not in the house, they are outside of the house because the spirit of the former owner is terrorizing them and does not want them to live in his house, its house, because they're black. And usually in a haunted house film, the couple would call a priest. They don't know a priest. They know a deacon. And so a deacon arrives.
Close enough.
Yeah, yeah. You get what you can take. And the deacon, this man of faith, we will come to discover that he doesn't have much. So, you know, their last shot at, you know, staying in this home, what they thought was going to be their forever home, I'll leave it there and you can see what happens next. But it's the larger story. It's actually what is showing this weekend is a short, of course, but there is a feature that hopefully will be made at some point. I wrote the feature first, and the story really, the themes are around, you know, legacy and belonging and generational wealth and generational trauma and racial trauma, and just not feeling like you're able to be comfortable in your own home. And so the short is heavily comedic, but there are some deeper themes there.
Great. And Eric, let me put you on the spot here. What impressed you about Daniel's movie, Possum Town, and Jamila's movie, Dwelling?
Well, with Possum Town, I think that it was the way a film ostensibly about the past really spoke about the present and where we're headed, you know. I think Possum Town and also our closing night film, Natchez, take a look at the American South as this place where there's great beauty, but, you know, the history is still sort of being negotiated and is still being played out in contemporary, like, social mores and sometimes bigotry, you know. So it's a film about where we are, and hopefully a film that will start some conversations about sort of correcting path and heading to a better future as a country. And just the regional collection of photography is so rich and so unique, and brought history alive in a way that you rarely see in film or any media. And with Dwelling, I mean, there were a couple jump scares and a couple laugh out louds where it's just pure cinema, and you just know that this film's going in the lineup. Particularly, you know, to see such talent right here in Baltimore is truly special. And while the story felt like it could be set anywhere, there's a real Baltimore quality to the work that I knew, you know, our audience would love as much as I did. And I'm just learning that there's a feature in the works, but there's such a strong tradition too of short films becoming sort of a calling card for making a feature, you know, whether a producer sees it. Jim Jarmusch's film Stranger Than Paradise, which was his breakthrough film, started with just one of the chapters being shot and him playing that at prestigious festivals and people seeing it and funding the feature. So I'm really hoping, hearing this about Dwelling, that this is the beginning of a larger journey for that story.
Yeah, can we pass the hat around?
Yeah, because it's all about the money, isn't it?
I mean, for sure.
You know, an 11-minute movie is still... That itself costs a bunch of money.
Absolutely.
And to make it into 90 minutes is a whole other thing. But Jed Dietz, I mean, Jamila's journey here, making a short that she can then use to, you know, pitch the longer feature, that's a typical pathway for movie makers, right?
It absolutely is. And it's the most important thing to do is you're learning the skills and about what you want to do with the art form is to go make movies, because... You know, you'll make mistakes, you'll learn things that way much better than just talking about it. And so it's such an amazing thing that you've done.
And Daniel, is this your first movie? Tell me a little bit about your background in movie making and how Possum Town fits in.
Sure. So this is my first feature film. I actually made a short probably 5 years ago about Natchez as well.
Because you're from Mississippi, right? You're from Columbus.
I am not from Columbus, actually. I'm from, I live in Atlanta, so I got connected to these photos when I was a graduate student at the University of Missouri, and the professor I did a research assistantship with is from Columbus, and he's one of the main characters in the film. And he basically uncovered, you could say, this photo archive. And so I was working just on research that was going towards a museum exhibit at the time, and that's how I came to the photos. And having recently completed a short film in Natchez, Mississippi, that was covering a lot of the themes I was just seeing in the photos, and then also in the town today. You know, I decided that this would be a great way to kind of continue to explore these themes.
All right, I got information off that internet thing, and I guess I got it wrong. So I apologize, and I appreciate your fixing that. Jamila, have you ever directed a movie before?
No, this is my first one.
So when it comes to, you know, figuring it out, making mistakes, did you spend a lot of time on sets, you know, other movie sets, doing other things? I mean, a movie set is a very unique environment, and to be all of a sudden the one in charge of it is a big responsibility.
For sure, for sure. I had a little bit of experience attending or being on a couple of other sets, but the biggest, one of the biggest blessings, actually two, was that I've been working as production coordinator for a documentary in production called Girl Island, the story of Sandy Stone, and that just gave me such exposure to the logistics and the, you know, all the many moving pieces that are necessary to, you know, have something come to fruition. So that was great experience, but I credit 100% being able to make this film through my fellowship with the Saul Zaentz Innovation Fund, because I was connected with mentors who really just worked alongside of me with budgets and you know, shot lists and just everything that I didn't know how to do. That, you know, I applied myself and spent many sleepless nights doing this, but they, you know, gave me advice and gave me support and gave me ideas and resources, you know, apply to this grant or look into this. So really, without that program, I don't think I could have made this film. And with my mentor, who's the producer, one of the producers for the project, Lucina Fisher, Emmy award-winning producer and filmmaker who definitely knows what she's doing. So I also surrounded myself with a crew. I was the least experienced person, so I could, you know, that made me feel comfortable because everyone else knew what knew what and how to do it. So I just, I had the vision and executed it with them.
That's Jamila Unique Krempel. She's the writer and director of Dwelling, which is screening tonight and tomorrow. Daniel Christian is here as well. He's the director of Possum Town. It's also going to get its world premiere this afternoon here at the New Next Film Festival. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday at the Movies. We are live from the New Next Film Festival along with Jed Dietz and Eric Hatch as well. So, Jed, you know, when it comes to young filmmakers making movies, give us a very short list of the things that are the hardest to learn immediately. What are the mistakes that a lot of young filmmakers, new filmmakers, do make?
Well, that list is infinite, actually. But I think it really gets solved by not being afraid to fail and to try things that you're really trying to express and then showing it to people and letting people, you know, react. And I think we've seen in the history of the Maryland Film Festival, and you guys are doing it so beautifully here, is audiences will help these filmmakers as they go through the festival world, see what they've done with great strength. And so many of the filmmakers that came out of Sundance, you have to remember, it was a discovery festival when Redford started it, because he was trying to get some marketing support for the people who come out of the Sundance labs. And I remember being at the first screening of Reservoir Dogs, and people were yelling at Tarantino, you know, how dare you show violence, like, you know, blah, 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 you know, people are dying on our streets. And Tarantino sort of threw his hands up. He said, I didn't kill anybody. And it's what he learned.
It's only a movie.
But what he learned was he was really grabbing people, and there were people reacting very strongly, and I think he learned the pluses and minuses of that and then went on to a great career.
So, Daniel, I would imagine that your challenge with this movie
is not unlike the challenge Eric had figuring out how many movies to put in out of the millions of submissions he got. You must have gone through Lord knows how many photographs to then whittle it down and figure out not only which ones, but the order in which you're going to put them in and how you're going to unfold the narrative. How did you approach that process?
Yeah, I think the way that I did that was really letting the modern stories that we found kind of dictate which photos we use, because we were really looking for the connection between the people that that we decided to focus on. And so it was, in some cases, looking for very obvious connections, like, oh, there's this man is in a garden, here's a photo of a man in a garden. In other instances, it was kind of looking for more suggestive or thematic connections. And so, it also helped to have Berkeley Hudson, who is, the expert on the photographs, as a character in the film and an executive producer. So, I mean, the way the film is structured is you're kind of in the actual photo archives with him as he's handling, these very the negatives. It's a very kind of tactile experience with the light box and everything. And so he's also making selections on what he wants to show. And we shot that after we had already done all of our documentary shooting. So, we knew what the stories were, and we kind of knew which, at least what direction to go with the photos. And then there was a little bit of exploration there as well, once you're in the archives.
Yeah, and Jamila Crempo, I'm fascinated by the notion of a shot list for a director that has to go into, a set and you have X amount of time, you have X amount of money. It's a very limited thing. How did you develop a shot list? Do you shoot everything that's in one location all at once and then move to another location? How do you do it?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. So we had one location. It was a one-day shoot at the beautiful Clifton House in West Baltimore. And we had interior and exterior shots, and based upon a number of factors, including lenses and camera and gimbal and lighting, I'm not the authority, make it as efficient as possible. We had 28 setups, which I've heard is a lot in one day in a 10-hour shoot. But you try to make it so that you're not lugging stuff in and out and resetting up lights in different places, because that really cuts down on your shooting time. But where I really started was is hand drawing the storyboards myself. Because when I write, I can see the shot in my head, but I didn't have the particular language because, again, I'm new to this. I didn't go to film school. I say this project was like my film school in an accelerated period of time. So it's like translating what the shot looks like visually into all of the technical components. Who's going to be involved and what lens you're using and all the various factors that make a shot a shot. It's really like magic when it all comes together.
It is magic. And Eric, when you're watching a movie as a person who knows so much about the process and have seen so many movies, are you consciously aware as a viewer, oh, look at that shot selection, look at that, look at that lens, look at that gimbal. I don't even know what a gimbal is, but I just heard Jamila say it, so I'm going to sound cool and say it too. But, I mean, is it a conscious thing that happens with you as you're viewing a film?
Probably more than the average viewer, but I think that one of my strong suits, if I have them as a film programmer, is that I'm still just sort of, it's still a magical process to me. I've never been a filmmaker myself. I don't aspire to be a filmmaker. I just love the art of it. And in a way, even though the methodology of programming a festival has to be very systematic and you have to stay very organized, I want the viewing experiences to sort of transport me the way a festival audience will have that experience with the right films at the right time. And both of these films certainly did that.
That's Eric Hatch. He is the programmer of the New Next Film Festival, which for the third year in a row is here at the Charles Theater. We are here at the Charles Theater as well on day two of the New Next Film Festival. Jed Dietz is the originator of the Maryland Film Festival. He's with us. And our filmmakers in this segment, Daniel Christian, he's the director of Possum Town. You can catch the world premiere this afternoon at 3:50 on Screen 2. And Jamila Unique Krempel, the writer and producer of Dwelling, which is screening tonight at 6:15 on Screen 4. And again, tomorrow afternoon at 3:30
on screen too. Thanks so much to both of you, and break a leg with your movies. I know the audiences are going to love them. Sam Pollard and Leah Claire Michaels will join us on the other side of a quick break. It's Midday at the Movies, live from the New Next Film Festival. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back. If you've just joined us, it's Midday at the Movies. We're broadcasting live from the Charles Theater in Baltimore, the site of the third annual New Next Film Festival presented by Baltimore Public Media. Festival co-founder and director of programming Eric Allen Hatch is back with us, along with the founder of the Maryland Film Festival, Jed Dietz. And we are joined now by Sam Pollard, an acclaimed film director and editor. Sam has recently relocated to Baltimore. Sam's 2022 documentary, Lowndes County and the Road to Black Power, is one of the free screenings that's being offered this weekend at New Next. As a matter of fact, it is screening right now here at the Charles Theater. Sam Pollard, welcome to the show and welcome to Baltimore.
My pleasure, Tom. Good seeing you. Good talking to you.
Good to have you here. Leah Claire Michaels is with us as well. She's an award-winning filmmaker, a Fulbright scholar, and interdisciplinary artist. She's also from right here in Baltimore. Her new short documentary is called Moon Crab, which is part of the Maryland Voices package of shorts that are featured this weekend at New Next. Leah, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And if you have questions during today's show, you can email them to us at midday@wypr.org. And before we talk to Sam and Leah, I want to mention another film by a Baltimore filmmaker, Lydia Cornett. She is a graduate of the Baltimore School for the Arts. She and Rachel Hilson, the wonderful actor who just had a big hit with a show called Duster on HBO, were classmates at the BSA. She has a film called Tessitura, which is Academy Award qualified. It's already won a bunch of awards, and it explores the history of gender fluidity in opera. So her film will be shown, I guess, today and Sunday. So plenty to check out. So Sam Pollard, we are delighted that you're making Baltimore home. You've worked with Spike Lee. You've worked on a lot of movies that a lot of people have enjoyed over the years. What's behind your decision to come here? We're delighted.
It was economics, Tom. Baltimore is a cheaper city than New York City, even though I'm born
I've heard
and raised
that.
There. And that's what brought me in. I've been to Baltimore many times, so it was a pleasant change.
Tell us a little bit about Lowndes County and the Road to Black Power. It's about voting rights in the 1960s.
You know, everybody knows about Martin Luther King going from Selma to Montgomery in 1965. But along the way, there's a little community called Lowndes County. And in 1965, as King and his people were leaving from Selma to go to Montgomery, members of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, they met up with some of the black people in Lowndes County who were trying to figure out how to get the rights to vote. And so they asked the SNCC members, this young firebrands led by Stokely Carmichael, to come into their community to help them get the power to vote. And that's what SNCC did. And people don't really talk about SNCC as much as they talk about the SCLC and Dr. King. So this was an opportunity to talk to Cortland Cox, you know, Judy Richardson, Jennifer Lawson, others who are SNCC members who went to Lowndes County in that period between 65 and 66 to help the black community get the power to vote, which they did. And you know, and it's really a really strong empowerment story about resilience and dedication and perseverance.
Yeah, and courage.
Absolutely.
You know, just amazing, amazing courage on the part of all those folks doing voter registration at a very dangerous time in U.S. history. And now, when we look at what's happening with voter registration, voter restrictions that are being put in by legislatures all over the country, it's kind of deja vu all over again. And
it's absolutely frightening. It's scary what the country's going through. You know, and I was a young man in my teens at that time, and I thought it was a pretty chaotic period in American history. And here we are again.
Yeah, here we are again indeed. So, Leah Claire Michaels, tell us about Moon Crab. It's about horseshoe crabs, I guess, huh?
Yes, indeed. So, Moon Crab is an experimental short documentary. I kind of call it a meditation on the horseshoe crab. And looking at how important they are as one of the oldest living creatures on our planet. They're 450 million years old, so pre-dinosaur, actually. We use their blood in a lot of biotech and biosafety testing, but they're also an anchor of our ecosystem in lots of different ways, and unfortunately are facing extreme population decline. And the film is also shot on various mediums, including 8x8, Super 8, 16mm, and then I eco-developed a lot of that film with seaweed, so making my own seaweed.
So tell me about that, the 8x8, Super 8 millimeter stuff. What does that all mean?
Yeah, so it's all film, actual film, like the old crank, hand crank cameras before we transitioned.
Last time I looked at my phone, there was no film, there's no place to insert the film.
No place
phone,
to insert, no, not at all. So I was found or gifted a series of older film cameras, so 8x8s and 16mm and Super 8 film. I personally was just in a place where I sort of needed a break from screens, but still wanted to be making films, and stumbled upon a bunch of really great literature about sustainable darkroom practices, and it really took me to a whole other place of filmmaking.
And Sam Paolo, you're also an executive producer of Natchez, is that correct?
Which
and
is that's playing Sunday.
That's Sunday, that's the final film of the festival, right? Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, Natchez is directed by a filmmaker named Susanna Herbert, and she went down to Natchez, Mississippi, and she's really looking at the complexity of race in that community between whites and blacks over the last, 100 years. So she spent about six months to a year down there shooting and documenting and talked to all people from all walks of life. And it's a pretty engaging film. And it's a wonderful companion piece to the film that's going to play this afternoon, Possum Town, which sort of deals with the same kind of issues, but in a different community in Mississippi.
Yeah. And Eric Hatch, when Leah describes her work as experimental, what does that mean?
Well, in this specific case, I think, what she was addressing in terms of the cameras and film stocks is a big part of it. But in general, I think the era of just information-based talking heads documentary has largely gone by the wayside, and we're trying to find new ways to think.
Sam Paolo is saying, no, it hasn't gone by the wayside.
Well, I mean, I think Sam's being modest because, his gift as an editor is just extraordinary, and I would never categorize his films in that way. But I think that Leah has really found such a beautiful way to make us not just learn about her subject, but feel.
Yeah. Sam, what do you think?
I would say that if you go back and you look at the early films of Jonas Mekas and Maya Deren from the 60s, they were experimental films, much like what Leah is doing now.
Well, that's perfect, because Maya Deren is one of my favorite filmmakers. So Sam knows.
And Jed, with the advent of streaming, with the opportunity for filmmakers to get their experimental films or whatever kind of films they have to an audience that doesn't require a wonderful theater complex like the Charles Theater, real quickly, I mean, how has that changed the business of filmmaking? It must have changed it significantly.
And it's as we speak, so we don't really know where all that's heading. I think the evidence is now very strong coming off of COVID, took a while, that people want to see movies in movie theaters. And I think the thing that is happening here this weekend that Eric has put together with all the work of the volunteers and everybody else is what we see even with streaming is the tip of the iceberg of what people are making. And what you're seeing here is, with just these two filmmakers, not to mention Dan in the panel before, but people who are taking history, some people will argue we should run from, and actually showing it to us in a way that's more full and more understanding and bringing us closer together as human beings.
Yeah, and Sam Pollard, I mean, the work of documentary filmmakers seems to me has never been more important, given the status of history in the public square these days. We've got states like Florida literally banning the teaching of African American history as an AP course for high school students. We've got people making aggressive action to suppress the telling of these stories. So if it gets out in a documentary film, that's going to find its audience one way or the other.
There's been an explosion in the last 10 years, going back with Michael Moore, where social issue documentaries have become more front and center, more prevalent, and really have grabbed an audience, you know? And so in these times, we need more films like that more than ever, you know? And there's, you know, there's always young documentary filmmakers, older documentary filmmakers who are still creating that type of work.
And from your perspective, I mean, having worked with the Spike Lees of the world and done some big, big projects, is streaming an upside or a downside overall?
I think it's wonderful. I have the ability now to go onto Criterion or to Hulu and see so many documentaries. I watched a documentary that Wim Wenders did about this fashion designer in the 1990s. It was fabulous. You know, so I love streaming. Yeah. I watch it all the time.
The accessibility is, just really quite something. That's Sam Pollard. He is a veteran film director and editor. His 2022 documentary, Lowndes County and the Road to Black Power, is about the pioneering 1960s voting rights campaign in Alabama. Sam, thank you so much, and it's an honor to have you here.
My pleasure, Tom. My pleasure.
Leah Claire Michaels, her short documentary is called Moon Crab. It's being screened today at 4 o'clock. And again, Sunday at 12:10. Thanks, Leah, and break a leg.
Thank you so much.
And thanks also to Jed Dietz, the founder and former director of the Maryland Film Festival. By the way, the 26th annual Maryland Film Festival gets underway at the Parkway Theater just up the street next month from November 5th to 9th. Thanks, Jed. Appreciate it, man.
Glad to be here.
And Eric Hatch, he is a co-founder and director of programming for the New Next Film Festival. Eric, good to see you. Let's give everybody a hand. The New Next Film Festival is underway. Come on down to the Charles Theater here in Baltimore and check it out. That's it for us today. Coming up Monday on Midday, my guests will be Dr. Mina Nguyen and Maryland Congressman Johnny Olszewski Jr. Stay tuned now for Fresh Air after news at the top of the hour today. Archive interviews with the actor Al Pacino and the director Sidney Lumet, marking the 50th anniversary of Dog Day Afternoon. Today's remote broadcast was produced by Sam Burmistaz and Rob Sivak. Shania Mapson's our in-studio engineer. Evan Kornblum engineered the show here. Charles with technical support from Megan Amos and Ray Heppner. Austin Cogman from Clean Cuts recorded the Midday theme music. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
You're listening to member-supported 88.1 WYPR.